2 minutes, so yeah, we got a lot to cover here. All right. We're going to get into the third step here. Now that we've discussed A, B, and C, the first two steps, that's all there is to do. There's nothing more to do, right? And it says, being convinced we were at step three, which is we decided. Everybody circle that, we decided. I want to point out that the whole purpose, I believe that the third step is the key to the entire program. The whole purpose of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the whole purpose of the steps, the whole purpose of sponsorship, the whole purpose of the 12 concepts for world service, and all of the things that we do around here, they are all designed for one purpose: to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. Okay? That's the whole purpose of this deal. Okay? One of the biggest mistakes that I see in Alcoholics Anonymous is people trying to turn their will and their life over to the care of God in step three. Okay? Because that's not what step three says. Step three says we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God. Right? If they meant us to turn our will and our life over in step three, guess what? We'd have a three-step program. Right? That's all that we'd need, okay? But we don't. If we could turn our will and our life over in six steps, we'd have a six-step program, okay? But the early pioneers of our program believed and felt and knew that we needed all 12 steps to effectively turn our will and our life over and to keep it turned over on a daily basis, okay? And that is why we have 12 steps. Another mistake I see a lot is I see people trying to get restored to sanity in step two, okay? That's not what step two says, okay? Step two says we came to believe that there's a power that can restore me to sanity, okay? And what we're going to see a little bit later on is that it's not until I get to step 10 that my will and my life is turned over. It's going to tell me that when we get to page 85. And it's also going to tell me that I've been restored to sanity. You see, as a result of the action steps that we're about to get into, those are the things that are going to turn my will and my life over and restore me to sanity. Does that make sense? So the only thing I'm doing in step three is I'm making a decision. The way my sponsor put it to me was like this, that step three really is a decision to apply action, right? That's really what it is, right? If you believe that old three frogs on a log and one decides to jump off, he hasn't done anything yet, okay? That the action we take to jump off that log is in steps 4 through 9. That's the action we take, right? It says, being convinced we were at step three, which is we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? Very specific, two ideas. Number one, book only talks about two wills, my will and God's will, right? If I'm not living in God's will, I'm living in my will, right? Pretty simple, right? And it's also very specific about what I am about to turn my will over to God's care and direction. My will, which is my thinking, my feelings, right? What goes on in here and in here, and my life. Right? Now, I could sort of handle the feelings and the thinkings, but, you know, I remember asking my sponsor, well, what if God wants me to be a garbage collector or something? You know? Ooh, you know? And, well, that may be. You know? That may be. He said, you think you got a better plan? I said, no. And here's where the trouble starts. Next paragraph says, the first requirement, okay, so there are requirements and there are more than one. The first requirement is that I must be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success, because on that basis, I am almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motive is good, right? And I'll tell you what, this idea right here kept me out of AA for the longest time, right? Because why would I be willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God if I still really believe that I can manage my own life, right? That apart from alcohol, if you take alcohol away, then I'm still okay. And that's step 1B, right? Not only is my problem that I have a drinking problem and I can't handle my drinking because I have an allergy and obsession, but also the idea that I cannot manage my own life sober, okay? And I'll tell you, I fell victim to that for a very, very long time, right? Because really, if I can run my own life sober, then really I don't need God, do I? Right? And that's the delusion that I lived in for a long time, right? Our book talks about two delusions. It talks about my drunken delusion, the delusion that somehow I'm going to find a way to drink successfully, And then over here on page 61, it's going to start talking about a delusion I have in sobriety, okay? What I call the sober delusion, okay? It goes on to say, most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. He is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Anybody here ever thought that? God, if only people around me would just get with the program, right? If they would only just get with the program, everything would be fine. And I see so clearly how to make everything right. And it's not that I want to be controlling, right? I just want it to be nice for everyone, you know? Including myself, by the way, right? Including myself, right? Yeah. If only his arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In making these arrangements, our actors may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. God, you know? I'm there. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. Yeah, I'm there too. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. Let's stop right there. Now, notice at this point, most normal people would say, you know, this isn't working out very well, so I'm going to change my approach. But do we do that? No. Notice what the next thing he says is, here's where the trouble starts for me. He begins to think. That's where my trouble starts. Right there, right? I tell the guys that I sponsor, if you have a good idea, call me. If you have a great idea, come see me, okay? Because when I start thinking, it's usually not a good thing, right? And this is why today I have a sponsor, okay? Because as an old sponsor of mine used to say, because the enemy has been educated. Okay? The enemy has been educated, and I can justify the most inane, insane stuff that you can possibly imagine under the guise of, well, I'm really just trying to do everybody a favor here, right? I know none of you do that, right? Okay. It goes on to say, he begins to think. What do I begin to think? Not that I'm wrong, not that I need to change my approach. No, I begin to think that life doesn't treat me right, right? So I decide on the next occasion to exert myself more. I become more demanding or gracious as the case may be, and still the play doesn't suit me. Right? Everybody underline it, because I'll tell you, that has really always been the truth of my existence. I don't know about anybody else in here, but before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the play never, ever suited me. It never suited me. Because I'd get the girl, but I didn't have the car. Or I'd get the car, but I didn't have the girl. Or I'd get the girl and the car, but I didn't have the job. Right? Or I'd get the girl, the car, and the job, but I didn't have the house. Right? Or every once in a while, I'd get it all together just like I wanted it. Right? And somebody'd come along and they'd screw it up. Right? They'd screw it up. And then I'd be resentful about that. Or every once in a while, and I'll tell you, I'm a big believer in this concept that you reach a point where you can't put anything between you and yourself. Okay, I remember there were times drinking where I would get everything just like I wanted it. And I would say, God, but why do I feel so bad? Right? Why do I still feel so bad inside? Because I really believe that if I only got all this stuff right, this would be okay. You know? And it didn't work that way. And so I didn't say, you know, maybe I need to look inside for a spiritual experience. No, you know what I said? It's not the right girl. You know, that's the problem. I need another girl, right? Or I need another car, right? Or this or an endless amount of things to try to fill this void in here. And I'll tell you, my experience was, it's going to talk about a little bit later on in the fourth step, this infinite presence, right? As I'm trying to fill this void that can only be filled by something infinite with finite things, right? With all of this other stuff. And it's never enough. It was never enough for me, and the play never, ever suited me. It goes on to say, admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. And I believe this is the founding statement for the need for the fourth step right here, right? Because I may be somewhat at fault, but I'm sure, and I was sure, it was really all about you. You did it to me. And if all of you would just shape up, I wouldn't need to drink as much as I do, right? Anybody here ever thought that? Yeah. It says he becomes angry, indignant, and self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not the victim of the delusion that he can wrest or take by force satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? You know, I used to believe that if I got what I wanted, I would be happy, right? I really believed that, and I spent a lot of time trying to get what I wanted so I could be happy, right? And I'll tell you, my experience was even when I got what I wanted, I still wasn't happy, you know? We were talking about Scott before. You know, Scott says something great, Scott Lee, about that I think is worth repeating, okay? And I try to give credit to the people who have shared some of these ideas with me. And one of the things Scott says is that there's a difference between pleasure and happiness, you know? And I made that mistake for a long time. I confused pleasure with happiness, but what I know today is that pleasure is something outside myself that will give me no lasting or permanent feeling on the inside. And happiness is something that comes from within me that cannot be shaken by anything outside of me, you see? And that's why when we get to page 83 and it says we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness, right? Boy, what a great and powerful promise that is. And I've experienced that. I've experienced that today, you know? Today I've experienced that. And most days since I took the fifth step, I have experienced that. All right? It goes on to say, is it not evident to the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and do not his actions which make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all that they can get out of the show? Is he not in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Everybody underline that. You know, I'm a big believer that you can always tell the alcoholic in the room not by the alcohol on his breath, but by the person who's creating the most confusion rather than harmony, right? And that's how we live, drunk or... Remember, they're not talking about the drunk alcoholic here. They're talking about how I can be sober, okay? And let me tell you, it took me a long time to look at some of those defects of character. The fact that, you know what, I still wanted to run the show. I still wanted to play God to people around me. I still was critical of my wife and my kids, right? I was still difficult. I was still condescending, right? I still acted like a jerk, right? And that's what they're talking about here. And so every day I have to ask myself this question. In this situation, am I being the producer of confusion or the producer of... I remember I was at work. I used to work for a company here locally, and we had a situation happen at one of our hotels, and I went there to meet with the chef and the food and beverage director, and we were talking about this, and they were talking about, you know, all this stuff that was going on. I said, well, you know, it sounds to me like you guys need to ask yourself this question. Do you want to be a producer of confusion or harmony? And they were both just blown away by my wisdom, you know? They said, that is great. Where did you come up with that? And I said, well, I just come up with this stuff sometimes, you know. Yeah. All right. Am I not the victim of the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I managed it well? You know, there was a direct correlation when I got here, and then I'll end on this, and then we'll do the third step prayer. But, you know, there was a direct correlation when I got here between the fact that my life was unmanageable and the fact that I was powerless over alcohol. See, my life was unmanageable in part because of my drinking. Does that make sense? Okay. And so it's natural to think that, therefore, if I stop drinking, my life will automatically become manageable by me. That's not what this example he's giving us says, is it? Right? It says that I have this delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happy. Take it by force. I can forcibly take satisfaction and happiness if only I manage my own life well. I'll be the master of my own destiny. And it gives us a perfect example of why it doesn't work. It says that, you know, self can never be satisfied, right? Still the play doesn't suit me. And that was always the case for me, no matter how good it got. It was never enough. I remember I had relationship troubles when I first got sober. I know none of you have ever had that happen. And I was having these relationship troubles, and you know what did I? And I had a sponsor, and he used to say things like, "Imagine you could have every woman in the world, but one. How would you feel?" You know, and I thought about that for a while. And he said it'd be great for about 6 months. And then that one would drive you crazy. You know, the one that you could, you know, imagine you got a bigger house than the one you have, right? You'd be happy for a while. And then you say, well, wait a minute, the guy up the street has a bigger house than me. And that's why self-will never works for me, right? Because it's always something else, something else. There's always someone else out there, right, that has more than I have, right? All right, page 62. First paragraph down. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Notice that it says is the root of our troubles, not was the root of our troubles. It doesn't say you've now reached a level of higher spiritual understanding. You have now passed through self-centeredness. No, it is the root of my trouble, and I'm here to report, unless someone here is more spiritually advanced than me, that it still is the root of my trouble. And most of the time, when I am having difficulty today, and it looks like my boss, or it looks like my wife, or it looks like my kids, it usually comes back to, I'm not getting my way. Really. That's really what it boils down to for me. And it says it's driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. My first sponsor said, you not only have self-centeredness, you have 100 forms of it. And you not only have it, you're driven by it, right? And that is absolutely so true for alcoholics. It says, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we've made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And where we're going to see this is next week when we get into the fourth step. That's where we're going to see how my actions and my decisions based on self have caused other people to harm me in some way, right? But that ultimately I am the perpetrator. I'm the perpetrator, not the victim. It so says, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of our health, ourself, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Now listen to this. Above everything, everybody underline that, we alcoholics must be rid of this self. Has anybody here ever heard that Alcoholics Anonymous is a selfish program? Anybody ever heard that before? That's a saying they used to throw around a lot when I first came in, right? That's what my book says. We must be rid of this selfishness or it kills us, right? Doesn't that sound about the same? Yeah. Above everything. Doesn't that sound about the middle to you? Above everything? Yeah. It says, we must or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Again, self cannot overcome self. You can write that right there in your book. Self cannot overcome self. This is not a self-help program. Nowhere in this book does it say, I help me. Okay? We had to have God's help. This is a God-driven program, not a self-driven program. If I could solve my problem, I wouldn't be here today. I'd be by the pool. Right? I would. All right. And now God's going to begin to, or Bill's going to tell us how to become God-directed. Okay? How do we, if we're selfish and self-centered, how do I begin the journey of becoming God-directed? Listen to what he says. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Note that for those of you who are new, it doesn't say we had to quit being God. Okay? We have to quit playing God. Okay? I have to quit trying to do the example that they gave us on the page before. I have to stop trying to run the whole show. I have to stop trying to think I know what's best for everyone. I have to stop being critical. I have to stop being the retired businessman who lolls in the floor to the sunshine, cynically complaining about the sad city. I have to stop all that stuff, right? I have to stop thinking that I know what's best for you, right? It says, and then it tells us why it didn't work. That's a good reason, right? It's a good reason. It says, next we decided, again, the third step is only a decision, that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director, not suggester. Okay? Our director. He is the principal, we are his agents, he is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Let's stop right there. The keystone of a new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. You'll remember a couple weeks ago when we were in There Is a Solution, I made mention that Bill's going to start drawing this picture of the spiritual structure that we're building, right? And we laid the first stone in Bill's story where he says, upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend Eddie, right? On page 11. And then on page 47, he says, the cornerstone of the spiritual structure that we're building is willingness, or the willingness to be willing, right? And now we're putting in another stone in the spiritual structure, what's called the keystone, okay? And if anybody who knows about building knows that the keystone of an arch, and he talks about this triumphant arch that we're building, is the diamond-shaped stone in the center of the arch that the other stones rest on. If you pull the center stone out, what happens to your arch? It falls apart, right? So this is a very important and critical stone that we're putting into our arch, okay? Now, we have a name for what they're talking about at the bottom of page 62, okay? Notice that he says, notice the words he uses. He says, he is the director, which makes me the actor, right? He is the principal, and I am the agent. He is the father, and I am the child, right? On the next page, he's going to say he's the employer, so that makes me the what? The employee, right? Okay, so there's a name for that. We call that taking the secondary position, right? The secondary position, okay? Which means I'm not in the primary position anymore, okay? Now, I still get to be in the show, okay? But I'm not calling the shots anymore, okay? I'm not calling the shots anymore. Top of page 63, everybody who doesn't already have this because they've attended this workshop, if you wish to, please write the following. D equals direction. C equals condition. P equals promise. From this point forward through the end of chapter 7, our book is comprised mainly of three things: directions, conditions, and promises. Okay? And I'm going to point some of them out, but if you go through here yourself and study it on your own, chapter by chapter, you will see that our book is comprised primarily of directions, conditions, and promises. And if I follow the directions and I meet the conditions, then guess what? I will get the promises. If I do not follow the directions and meet the conditions, then I probably will not get the promises. Here's an example. When we sincerely took such a position, what position? The secondary position, right? What kind of word is sincerely? That's a conditional word, right? When I sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. It says we had a new employer. That's a promise, isn't it? Right? Capital E. I have a new employer. It was explained to me that when I take the third step, really what I'm doing essentially, since God is the employer, is I am firing myself from running my own life based on poor job performance. Right? And I'm telling you, if anybody else had run my life the way I had run it till the time I walked in here, I'd have fired them a long time ago. Right? Long time ago. It goes on to say, being all-powerful, that's a promise. He provided what we needed, promise, not what we wanted, notice that, what we needed. If we kept close to him, that's a condition, and performed his work well, that's a direction. Right? Everybody see that? See how that works? Okay. So how do we keep close to him and perform his work well? Well, I could tell you my experience. The only thing that I've done since I got here in 1988 for the last, what I know can be the last time, is keep close to him in step 11 and perform his work well in step 12, right? I'm the luckiest guy I know. I have a better life than I've ever had today. And it's funny that the more I do this, the better my life gets. And that's really all I've ever done, right? All I've ever done since I've gotten here consistently. And I've had jobs have come and gone, relationships have come and gone, cities and states have come and gone, you know. But you know what? I have always worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always worked these steps, and I've always worked with new people. And guess what? I've got the best life I've ever had today, right? And I'm here to tell you, everybody that I know who has done that same thing will report the same thing. All right. It goes on to say, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. Another promise. As we felt a new power flow in, promise. As we enjoyed peace of mind, promise. As we discovered we could face life successfully, promise. As we became conscious of his presence, which we know is the essence of a spiritual experience, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Everybody circle that word. Now, does that mean I'm a born-again Christian? Some of us may be. Some of us may be. But that's not what they're talking about here. What I believe it means is that we're reborn to the life that I believe every single one of us was intended to live. You'll remember that at the end of We Agnostics, I said I believe we were all born on four planes of existence, spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. And that somewhere along the line, I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit through self-will, right? And you see, when I work these steps, when I take this third step prayer, when I make that real decision, all of a sudden I start to see that light shining through again, right? My eyes become open for the first time. That was my experience. See, I think alcoholics are some of the luckiest people in the world. We have two lives in one lifetime. Think about that for a minute. I had the life that I had before I came here, and I have the life that I have today as a result of these 12 steps, right? And then it gives us the third step prayer right here, which we're going to skip over for 1 second, down to that next paragraph where it says, we found it very desirable. Here's some directions for taking the third step. It says, we found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. But if you don't have that option, it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea. Here are the conditions for taking the third step. Number one, voicing it. What does that mean? It means I have to say it out loud, isn't it? Without reservation. That's the second condition. Then it says, this was only a beginning. Everybody underline that. You remember back in More About Alcoholism, we talked about Jim. Everybody remember Jim? Jim was the guy that mixed his whiskey with milk, right? And in Jim's story, it says that Jim knew he was an alcoholic, and we told him what we knew of alcoholism, and it says he made a beginning, right? And I said that Jim took the first three steps, and you just have to trust me, and I tell you why I believe that. This is why I believe that, because it says right here, this was only a beginning, right? Only a beginning. It says, though if honestly, that's the third condition, and humbly, and my sponsor told me that humbly means on my knees, okay, made an effect, sometimes a great one, not always a great one, was felt at once. Now, I will tell you that in 1939, if you read some of the history of Alcoholics Anonymous in our program-approved literature or other pieces of literature that are out there, they will tell you there was only one way to do the third step in 1939. Okay? That's it. You would go to a house meeting, okay, and they would do the third step at group level. Okay? You didn't do your third step with your sponsor. You did it in front of the whole group. Okay? And then guess what they would do when you were done? They would vote on it to see if you were really sincere, right? And if they didn't think you were sincere enough, guess what? They'd make you do it again, okay? I wonder how many of us would have lived through that process, right? All right. Annie Smith in her journal, Dr. Bob's wife, his wife, would say that they called the third step in their group in Akron the prayer of decision. The prayer of decision. And that's really what this is. The decision that I'm going to make is very simple. Do I want to live in the problem? Okay? Do I want to go back out and drink? Or do I want to live in the solution? And if I make a decision, if I take this prayer of decision, what I'm really saying is I'm willing to go through the rest of the process. I'm willing to open my mind and stop believing that I know what's best and work the rest of the steps and just take it on spec. Right? Just take it on spec. Now, I got into this habit a few years ago. For those of you who wish to join me, how many people have never done a group level third step before? Several people. Well, those of you who wish to, and you certainly aren't obligated to do so if you don't want to, okay? But the rest of us, we're all going to get down on our knees and do the third step prayer, okay? And if you don't want to get on your knees, you could sit or whatever you want to do. But we're going to have a moment of silence, and then we'll start with the third step prayer, all right?
We'll read it right out of the book, just as it's written. Thank you.
has taken the third step. Yeah. Willie, I don't think they were very sincere. What do you think? Do you think we should do it again? Yeah, no. We're not going to make them do it again. Now, you know how you know if you're sincere? Watch your feet. Watch what you do next, you see. Because if I've really made a decision, then I will do exactly what the book says, which is, it says at the bottom of page 63, next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, right? Let's stop right there. Next. The word next is defined as follows. Following immediately, right? Following immediately. So if I say take the next right turn, the turn that's following immediately. So it doesn't mean, notice that it doesn't say anywhere in here, you've done a great job with the third step, take 6 months off and let it sink in, right? I hear that sometimes too, right? Well, I'm letting my third step sink in, right? That's not what the book says. The book says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Now listen to this. It says, though our decision, step three, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless followed when? At once, by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Right? You see, I've taken the third step, and I'm still blocked off from God. Right? I have made a decision, but the book says I have to now get down to the cause and the conditions of the things which have been blocking me off from the sunlight of the Spirit, right? And it says that my decision is a vital step, and it is, okay? But that it's going to have little permanent effect. In other words, it's not enough to keep me permanently sober unless I follow it with a strenuous course of action, right? So what does this mean? We know there's not enough power in the first step to keep me sober permanently. We know there's not enough power in the second step to keep me sober permanently. And right here on page 64, it also tells me that there's not enough power in the third step to keep me sober permanently. And this is why we get what we call the 1-2-3 waltz. Right? Anybody ever heard of that? That's 1-2-3 drink. 1-2-3 drink. 1-2-3 drink. Right? And people go through the first three steps, and the book says that they get this effect. Right? Sometimes a great one. Right? They have this great spiritual feeling. And they start going to meetings, but they stop taking the action. They don't take the rest of the process. And that newness begins to wear off, and eventually they end up drunk again. Let me read you something real quick before we end. This is from Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. This is a guy that I know some of you know, that they're quoting in here, who was one of our founders, a guy by the name of Clarence S. And Clarence actually founded AA in Central Florida. Okay, he came down here from Cleveland and founded AA in Central Florida. And they're quoting him in here as they're talking about the steps and how they did things in the early days of the fellowship. And it says, Dorothy S., which was his wife, recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all of us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim. And all the people who were already in AA would come down, trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while they would tell us he had a real surrender. Again, third step at group level. I often wonder how many people that come in now would survive an experience like that, a regular old-fashioned prayer meeting. The newcomers surrendered in the presence of all those other people. After the surrender, step three, many of these steps involving inventory, step four, admission of character defects, steps five, six, and seven, making of restitution, steps eight and nine, were taken within a matter of days. Dr. Bob, as we know, tackled what is now the ninth step of AA by consciously making restitution to friends and acquaintances on the same day he took his last drink. More than 40 years later, a number of modern AA-oriented treatment facilities are encouraging patients to go through the first five steps before they were released. This procedure is not that much different from what the first group was doing in 1935. So when an AA mentions now that they didn't rush the steps or have hospitalization when he came in the program, he may be talking about the old days, but he's not talking about the old days, right? So, right here in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, okay? Now, We've just talked about the simple religious idea that we talked about in Bill's story, the idea of the third step. And now we're going to begin to talk about this practical program of action. Bill says that the first step of that is this house cleaning, right? We get some power in step three. The book tells us that, right? And I think anybody that's done a third step will tell you that there is some power in step three. But it's not enough power for a guy like me. Maybe it's enough power. See, I believe that the third step gives us just enough of a pardon to get through the rest of the process. Okay? But here's what happens, and this is one of the reasons that I push guys through the steps. Is they take the third step, they start to feel a little better, they start going to meetings, they get a couple good nights sleep, they start to gain a little weight, and all of a sudden, guess what? They lose that desperation, right? They lose that desperation, and all of a sudden they start thinking, I got this. I'll just go to meetings and not drink, right? And then guess what? 3 months goes by, 4 months goes by, and all of a sudden that liquor store starts calling because they haven't removed that obsession to drink, right? For those of you who are new, I've got some good news and some bad news. The good news is we have a way of life around here that can solve your problems and enable you to give you slowly what alcohol used to quickly. Okay? The bad news is it doesn't work as fast as four shots of tequila. Thanks.